It's 5:06. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Early this morning, Governor Scott Walker officially announced his candidacy for president with a tweet that said, "I'm in. I'm running for president because Americans deserve a leader who will fight and win for them."
This evening, Walker is holding a big event to kick off his presidential campaign. Now, journalists from across the nation have converged on the Waukesha County Expo Center, waiting for the governor's remarks, which could happen at any moment. We'll air his speech live as soon as he takes the podium.
Our own Sean Johnson is on the scene. He's the state capitol reporter for WPR News. Hey, Sean.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good, thanks. So you're right there on the scene. Describe it for us. What are you seeing?
Right now, the crowd is pretty quiet as Walker's sons, Matt and Alex, are taking the stage. Not sure, they might be the last speakers before the governor comes out to give his speech. We heard earlier from a few conservative women in Wisconsin, Rachel Campos Duffy, wife of Wisconsin Congressman Duffy. Also heard from Senator Leah Buchmeier. Looks like now we're going to hear from someone else ahead of the governor. His wife, Tanette Walker, is going to be next. So quite a few warm-up acts. We don't exactly need it in this building. It is very steamy in here with all the people packed in, a few thousand, and the broadcast equipment from around the country. You can actually see the heat rising off of the equipment here. So it's warm.
And any idea about what the governor might say? We've been hearing a fighter and a winner from the governor so far. Is that what we're expecting to hear expounded upon?
I would expect to hear the same themes that he put in that YouTube video that was released this morning. He's going to emphasize, you know, over and over again that he won 3 times in 4 years in a blue state. You know, it's worth mentioning that turnout in those elections is different than presidential turnout, but that's still one of the governor's, you know, big feather in his cap. He's going to mention the recall election. As speakers ahead of him have done, they've said, remember the recall, remember where you were, remember what it felt like. And he's going to mention the protests, as speakers ahead of him have, get the crowd to remember what it was like then, remember the stand that he took. And I think it'll be interesting to see what he says about other candidates in the race. Might not mention some of the Republican candidates in the race, but we heard early on Rachel Campos Duffy went after Hillary Clinton extremely aggressively right from the get-go. So this would be a chance for the governor. He's now an official candidate. There's really nothing holding him back. Be a chance for him to do that perhaps more aggressively than he has in the past. But I think by and large it's going to be, hey, we're in the same place we were a few years ago when I celebrated that big win. Remember what that was like? Let's do it again.
And Sean, he is the 15th candidate in the field, something like that. Do you have a sense about how he intends, starting today and moving forward, to distinguish himself from the pack?
Well, this week is going to be very busy for him. He's going to be traveling to 5 states, and this is usually the time of year when, after a governor signs a budget, he would travel around Wisconsin and talk about different stuff that was that he wants to highlight. He is not going to be traveling in Wisconsin this year. He is going to be traveling in South Carolina, in Nevada, in Georgia, in New Hampshire, and then in several stops in Iowa, where he hopes to do well in the presidential campaign. So a very aggressive schedule for the governor. And typically the way these things go is after these candidates announce, even if everybody is pretty sure they're going to get in, you do see a little bump in their their approval rating after their announcement. So they benefit from this, and he's going to try to milk it as much as he can.
And we've been hearing a lot about the importance of Iowa to Governor Walker, winning Iowa. What sort of focus have you seen from the governor on Iowa and winning there?
Yeah, I mean, just aside from the travel plans, it's a good state for him for a few reasons. You know, it's right next to him, for one. It's easy for him to make the trip from Wisconsin to Iowa. He lived in Iowa for a time as a child, so he's got that going for him, and he can talk about that. And there's a pretty heavy contingent of social conservatives in Iowa. That is something that Scott Walker hasn't emphasized during his time in Wisconsin, but it's definitely something that his record is pretty good for social conservatives, and so you're going to, you know, that's another reason why he feels pretty good about Iowa.
All right, Sean, we're going to let you check out what's going on there at the Expo Center in Waukesha, and we'll check back in with you later. Thank you.
Thanks.
That was WPR State Capitol reporter Sean Johnson. Now we go to Paul Singer for a national perspective. He's the Washington correspondent for USA Today. Paul, welcome back.
Hey, Veronica, how you doing?
Doing well, thanks. So we're listening for Governor Walker at the Expo Center, about to jump into that race and head on into Iowa onto a tour. How's he polling right now?
He's polling fine, which is to say he's in the top 10, which is all that really matters at the moment. I mean, the whole idea is to get to the debate stage August 6th as one of the top tier candidates, and Walker fits that bill. He's in most polls second, third, somewhere in that range, behind Mr. Bush and behind Mr. Trump, but Trump is a bit of a bubble, we suspect. So Walker is a pretty serious contender.
And when you look at him so far, what he's done in Wisconsin, what he's known for, what do you see as his biggest assets going in?
Right. Well, I thought your question earlier was exactly the right question, is how does he distinguish himself? I mean, you've got a crowd now of 15, 16, 17 Republican candidates, and they're all going to be in various stages of opposed to Obamacare and in favor of lower taxes and against a great deal of government spending. So how do you break away? And I think that Scott Walker has as his advantage, he can say, I've implemented this stuff and won. I've managed to fight the unions and win and implement it in, as Sean was saying, a blue state. He managed to cut taxes and cut spending, and he can say I've fought the conservative fight on the ground, and that gives me some credibility. And also, I think he comes at this as, I think he'll be emphasizing this a lot, as a middle class kid. He was not rich. He was not the son of great privilege. He's not from a famous family. He will use that to distinguish himself from some of the other candidates in the field.
And as we talked about, a big field it is. 17th is Governor Walker's number in that field. So what sort of liabilities does he have that other candidates might be looking to pick apart?
Well, he's got a couple liabilities. He's been a little inconsistent on exactly where he is on immigration. People will ping him on that topic. He's been a little inconsistent on gay marriage for the conservatives. I think that was going to be, and some of the other social conservative issues, he's going to have to really prove himself. He has not been an active leader, I think, again, as Sean was saying, in the state on those topics over the years in the way someone like Huckabee has been. He also has, at the moment, you would know better than I gather, he's having a bit of a difficulty with his budget in his own state and with both parties. That's going to be something he's going to have to explain once the rest of the nation figures it out, if, in fact, he gets far enough that people get that deeply into his record.
Is that typical, though, that governors running sometimes face that perception that they're neglecting the state? They may dip in their state, but do okay elsewhere in the country.
Yeah. State records are really interesting. We've had a bunch of governors running, not least, of course, amongst them Mitt Romney, and your state record becomes a bit of an issue nationally. I mean, you remember Mitt Romney, of course, part of the issue was when he was governor of the state, they adopted something that looks a lot like Obamacare, and he had to explain that. But on the other hand, governors have this inherent advantage of being able to say that I actually, exerted executive authority, whereas most of the senators who I'm running against were just flapping their gums. Now, again, the other disadvantage for Walker is that he has no real foreign policy experience, and foreign policy is going to be an important issue in this election, so he's going to have to prove that he is solid on those issues.
All right, and we've just gotten word Governor Walker about to take the podium. We go live to the governor in Waukesha.
And the person that I hope will be the 45th president of the United States, Scott Walker.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I love America. You know, as kids, my brother David and I used to love to go over and visit one of our neighbors by the name of Clear Condon. Mr. Condon was a bit of a legend in our small town. You see, he had served our country in World War I and World War II. Then, like so many other veterans, he came back and served his community. You know, over the years, we used to love to see him down at the concession stand at Legion Baseball. He'd help out in our church, and he was a leader in my Boy Scout troop. In fact, I can remember over the years, before Memorial Day, he would organize me and all the other scouts as we would go through and put up flags on the graves of the fallen. It was impossible to be around Mr. Condon and not share his love for God and country. You know, I think back 30 years ago, Mr. Condon's American Legion Post helped me attend a program called Badger Boy States. And it was there that I learned about state and local government. You know, along the way, it was interesting. I got the chance to be selected to represent Wisconsin at a program out in Washington, D.C. called Boys Nation. And there I met another veteran, a Vietnam veteran from Georgia, by the name of Bob Turner. Now, Bob and all the other veterans that ran that program not only taught us about the federal government and national elections, they shared their love for our country. And they inspired within me the importance of public service when it comes to defending our liberties. Veterans like that remind me that what makes America great is the fact that America is a can-do kind of country. Unfortunately, we have a government in Washington that just can't quite seem to get the job done. You know, Washington, or as I call it, 68 square miles surrounded by reality. Well, the good news is, it's not too late. We can turn things around. To do that, we need new, fresh leadership. Leadership with big, bold ideas from outside of Washington. The kind of leadership that knows how to get things done, like we've done here in Wisconsin. Since I've been governor, we took on the unions and we won. We lowered taxes by $2 billion. In fact, we lowered taxes on individuals, on employers, and property owners. Property taxes today are lower than they were 4 years ago. How many other governors can say that? Since I've been governor, we passed lawsuit reform and regulatory reform. We defunded Planned Parenthood and passed pro-life legislation. We enacted Castle Doctrine and concealed carry so we can protect ourselves, our families, and our property. And we now require a photo ID to vote in this state. If our reforms can work in a blue state like Wisconsin, they can work anywhere in America. As I travel this country, though, I got to tell you, I hear from people who say they're frustrated with politicians telling people what they're against and who they're against. Americans want to vote for something and for someone. So tonight, let me tell you what I'm for. I'm for reform, growth, safety. I'm for transferring power from Washington into the hands of hardworking taxpayers in states all across the country. That's real reform. I'm for building a better economy that allows everyone to live their piece of the American dream. That's pro-growth. And I'm for protecting our children and our grandchildren from radical Islamic terrorism and all the threats in the world. That's true safety. My record shows that I know how to fight and win. Now more than ever, America needs a president who will fight and win for America. So first, let me tell you why I'm for real reform in Washington. You see, our big, bold reforms here in Wisconsin took the power out of the hands of the big government special interest and put them firmly into the hands of the hardworking taxpayers. Today in this state, people who are actually elected by local property taxpayers literally run our schools. And that means we got rid of things like seniority and tenure. That means we can hire and fire based on merit and pay based on performance and put the best and the brightest in our classrooms. Now think about that. 4 years later, graduation rates are up. Third grade reading scores are higher. And Wisconsin's ACT scores are now second best in the country. Our reforms work. That just goes to show that government closest to the people is generally the best, which is precisely why we need to take power and money out of Washington and send it back to our states in key areas like Medicaid and transportation and workforce development and education. Sadly though, Washington seems to think that success is measured by how many people are dependent on the government. We measure success by just the opposite, by how many people are no longer dependent on the government. Yeah. We understand that true freedom and prosperity do not come from the mighty hand of the government. They come from empowering people to control their own lives and their own destinies to the dignity that is born of work. Of work. That's what we stand for. Now, as a kid, my first job was washing dishes at the Countryside Restaurant. Then I moved up to the big time. I started flipping hamburgers in high school at McDonald's to save up for college. My dad, who you heard before, was a small-town preacher, and my mom was a part-time secretary and bookkeeper. My grandparents were farmers who didn't have indoor plumbing until my mom went off to junior high school. My dad's dad was a machinist for 42 years at Barbara Coleman down in Rockford, Illinois. My brother and I have thought back throughout the years, and we've realized we didn't inherit fame or fortune from our family. What we got was the belief that if you work hard and you play by the rules, you can do and be anything. That's right. You see, that's the American dream. And that is worth fighting for. When we help people, adults are able to work, transition from government dependence to true independence, we help more people live that piece of the American dream. We have a program right here in Wisconsin that requires people to be signed up for one of our employability training programs, one of our job training programs, before they can get a welfare check. And now, as of the budget I just signed, we make the same requirement to make sure people can pass a drug test before they get a welfare check. That's right. Now, you can only imagine what the defenders of the status quo thought when I proposed those reforms. They said I was making it harder to get government assistance. My reply, no, I'm making it easier to get a job. And isn't that what it's all about? Now, you know, strong families are important in this whole role as well. You see, we know that children are raised in a household with both parents involved. They're more likely to finish school, to get a good job, and to live a life free of government dependence. We need a federal government that will actually stand up and support strong families by getting rid of the marriage penalty and by getting rid of policies, welfare policies, that make it hard for fathers to play an active role in the lives of their children. We need to encourage families. I know, thinking about my own family, I know for me, both my parents were so important for David and me as we grew up as kids. And now for Tonette and I, we try to be good role models for Matt and Alex, and they've turned out pretty well, haven't they? They're pretty impressive to watch there. We're so proud of them. And I think about that, and I think about Matt, and I think about Alex, and I think about all the others in their generation. And for them, I want them to grow up in a more free and prosperous country. That's really about the American dream there. Now, to ensure that prosperity, we need to be for a pro-growth economic plan that enables our individuals and our families to earn, to save, and to achieve their piece of the American dream. Now, there's a real contrast out there. Instead of the top-down, government-knows-the-best approach that you hear from so many in Washington, we need to build the economy from the ground up in a way that's new and fresh, organic and dynamic, that says, as long as you don't violate the health and safety of your neighbor, go out and start your own career, build your own business, live your own life. Yeah. You see, that's freedom. The kind of freedom that's the cornerstone of the American dream. And so we've got a plan to help more people live that dream. A plan that will help more people create more jobs and higher wages. And you know what it starts with? We need to repeal Obamacare once and for all. We need to repeal the so-called Affordable Care Act and put patients and families back in charge of their health care decisions, not the federal government. Many of you here know when I first became governor, I literally allowed the state to join the federal lawsuit against Obamacare on my very first day. We need a president who on the first day will call on the Congress to once and for all repeal Obamacare entirely. Then we need to rein in the out-of-control federal regulations that are like a blanket on the nation's economy. Sure, enforce common sense, but let's get rid of the bureaucratic red tape. As governor, I called for a moratorium on all new regulations. We can do the same in Washington, and then we can repeal all the other bad Obama regulations to get this economy going again. Next, we need to put in place an all-the-above energy policy that says we're going to use the abundance of what God has given us here in America and on this continent. You know, that's right. We are an energy-rich country, and we can literally start refueling our economic recovery. We need a president who on day one will approve the Keystone Pipeline. That's right, approve that pipeline and put in place a plan to level the playing field for all their forms of energy. And then we need to help people get the education and the skills that they need to succeed. Because we know if we do that, we can help people find careers that pay far more than the minimum wage. Here in Wisconsin, we reformed public education. And we provided more quality choices. Quality choices for families, because you see, I trust families and I trust parents to make the right decision for their children. I believe that every child, regardless of zip code or background or what their parents does for a living, I believe that every child deserves access to a great education, be it at a traditional public or a charter or a choice or a private or a virtual or a homeschool education. Every child deserves access to a great education. That's why I want to work, and you know what, along with that, I want to make sure we have high standards. But those standards should be set at the local level. No Common Core, no nationwide school board. That's why I'll work so hard to take power and money out of Washington and send it back to our states and our schools where it's more effective, more efficient, and more accountable to the American people. Now think about this. If you were to take a dollar out of your purse or your wallet, where would you rather spend that? In Washington or at your child's school? I'd rather spend it at your child's school, and if you give me the chance, we're going to send those dollars back to help your child at your school. And then we need to lower the burden on our taxpayers so you can keep more of your hard-earned dollar. We need to do that for individuals as well as job creators, because we need to make our job creators competitive again in the world so they can bring more jobs back from overseas to put more of our fellow Americans back to work right here in America. And you know what? We can do it. We can do it because we did it in Wisconsin, and we can do it in Washington. Now, some people wonder why I spend so much time focused on lowering the tax burden here and why I want to do it in Washington. Well, some of you know that Toinette and I like to shop at Kohl's, right? So over the years, I've learned if I'm going to go buy a new shirt, I go to that rack that says it was $29.99, and now it's $19.99. And then we go up to the cash register and we get out the insert from the Sunday newspaper, you know, the little scratch-off one there. Or maybe we get the flyer we got back at home, right? Where you get 15 or 20, or if you're really lucky, 30% off, right? You know what I'm talking about. And then as the clerk is ringing it up, Toinette scoops into her purse and pulls out some of that Kohl's cash. And next thing you know, they're paying me to buy the shirt, right? Well, not really, but it seems like it, right? So how does a great company like Kohl's make money? They make it off of volume, right? They make it off of volume. You see, they could charge that higher price and a few of you could afford it, but they lower the price, broaden the base, and they make more money off of volume. That's what I think about your money, the taxpayers' money. You see, the government could charge you a higher rate and some of us could afford it, but if you lower the rate, broaden the base, we expand the volume of people who can participate in the economy. Years ago, we used to call that a similar plan was successful under President Ronald Reagan. And back then, we used to call it the Laffer Curve. Today, I call it the Kohl's Curve, because I believe you can spend your money far better than the federal government. And when we do, the economy will get a whole lot better. To prosper, however, we need to live in a safe and stable world. That's why I'm for true safety. The Commander-in-Chief has a sacred duty to protect the American people. In my lifetime, the best president when it comes to national security and foreign policy was a governor from California. Under his leadership, we rebuilt the military. We stood up for our allies. We stood up to our enemies. And without apology, we stood for American values. That led to one of the most peaceful times in modern American history. Sadly, today, under the Obama-Clinton doctrine, America is leading from behind. And that has us headed towards a disaster. Think about this. We got a president who drew a line in the sand and allowed it to be crossed. A president who called ISIS the JV squad, Yemen a success story, and Iran a place we can do business with. Iran. Think about that. When my brother David and I were kids, I can still remember, we used to tie ribbons around the tree in front of our house during the 444 days that Iran held 52 Americans hostage. One of those hostages was Kevin Hermaning, who grew up down the way in Oak Creek. Kevin was the youngest of the hostages, a Marine who'd just been assigned to serve at the U.S. Embassy in Tehran. Kevin Hermaning is here today with us. Kevin knows that Iran is not a place to do business with. You see, Iran hasn't changed much since the day he and the other hostages were released on President Reagan's first day in office. Looking ahead, we need to terminate the bad deal with Iran on the very first day in office. We need to terminate that deal on the very first day in office, put in place crippling economic sanctions on Iran, and convince our allies to do exactly the same thing. Earlier this year, President Obama proclaimed that the greatest threat to future generations is global warming, climate change. Well, Mr. President, I respectfully disagree. The greatest threat to future generations is radical Islamic terrorism, and we need to do something about it. We can start by lifting the political restrictions on our military personnel already in Iraq and empower them to help our Kurd and Sunni allies reclaim the territory taken by ISIS. Because you know what? On behalf of your children and mine, I'd rather take the fight to them instead of wait till they bring the fight to us. We need to acknowledge that Israel is an ally and start treating Israel like an ally. There should be no daylight between our two countries. That's why early this year when I went to Israel, I not only met with the prime minister, I met with the opposition leader to let them know that if I were president, there would be no daylight between the United States and Israel going forward. We need to stop the aggression of Russia into sovereign nations. You see, Putin believes in the old Lenin principle that you probe with bayonets. If you find mush, you push. Under Obama and Clinton, Putin has found a whole lot of mush over the last few years. The United States needs a foreign policy that will put steel in front of our enemies. We need to stop China's cyber attacks, slow their advances into international waters, and speak out about their abysmal human rights record. And we need to have the capacity to protect our national security interests here and abroad and those of our allies. That begins by rebuilding the defense budget by going back to the levels proposed by Secretary of Defense Gates. We need to honor our men and women in uniform by giving them the resources that they need to make us safe, and going forward by giving them the quality and timely health care that they deserve when they return home. But most of all, the best way we can honor them is by fighting to win. You see, this is important. Our goal should be peace, but there will be times when America must fight. And if we must, Americans fight to win. Going forward, the world must know that there is no greater friend and no worse enemy than the United States of America. America is a great country. It's a great country. And you know what? We just have to start leading again. It's not too late. We can do it because we've done it before. Think about it. Veterans like Claire Condon and Bob Turner remind me that what makes America great, what makes us exceptional, what makes us the greatest country in all of the world has been all throughout our history. In times of crisis, be it economic or fiscal, be it military or spiritual, there have been men and women of courage who've been willing to stand up and think more about future generations than they thought about their own political futures. Ladies and gentlemen, this is one of those times in American history. And so, after a great deal of thought and a whole lot of prayer, we are so honored to have you join with us here today as we officially announce that we are running to serve as your President of the United States of America. Tonette and I want our sons, Matt and Alex, and all the other sons and daughters like them, to grow up in a country that is as great as the country we inherited. Americans deserve a president who will fight and win for them. Someone who will stand up for the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Someone who will stand up for our religious freedoms and all of our other constitutional rights. Someone who will stand up for America. You see, it doesn't matter whether you come from a big city or a suburb or a small town. I will fight and win for you. Healthy or sick, born or unborn, I will fight and win for you. Young or old or anywhere in between, I will fight and win for you. Over the years, I've met some amazing people, many of whom have come here from other places around the world. I got to tell you, to a person, the people I've met like that tell me the reason they came here was not to become dependent on the government. No, the reason they came here was because America is one of the few places left in the world where it doesn't matter what class you were born into or what your parents did for a living. In America, you can do and be anything you want. That's the American spirit. You see, in America, the opportunity should be equal for all of us. But the outcome, well, that's up to each and every one of us here and across this great country. That's why we just took a day off to celebrate the 4th of July and not the 15th of April, because in America, we celebrate our independence from the government, not our dependence on it. That's why I love America. That's why we love America. And that's why working together, we can fight and win for America. Thank you for coming out. God bless you all for being here. God bless our military. And may God continue to bless the United States of America.
As Governor Scott Walker kicking off his official presidential campaign from Waukesha. Joining us now, staying with us, Paul Singer, Washington correspondent for USA Today, and now Lily Gorin, professor of political science at Carroll University in Waukesha. Lily, you've been listening in our Milwaukee studio. Can you talk about how Governor Walker took what he did in Wisconsin and tried to make that his resume for a Republican primary?
Sure. Thanks for having me on today. I mean, Walker has always sort of presented himself in public life, particularly at the statewide level and now at the national level, as a kind of happy warrior. And that was really a lot of what he was talking about today with regard to his Wisconsin resume and how it's prepared him for going onto the national stage and running for president, that he's a fighter. And as you saw, you heard him sort of do the repeated refrain towards the end of the speech that he's going to fight and win for you. That was the line that he was adding at the end of each of the lists of the points, that he's going to stand up for America, for the born and the unborn, and that he's going to fight and win for you. And he sort of wove that sort of fighter theme throughout the speech, which is also based on some of his earlier speeches in Iowa. The speech that got a lot of national sort of attention in January or February, where he also, again, sort of made the fighter kind of speech. And you saw him visibly. He's in, Oxford shirt with his sleeves rolled up. He doesn't have a jacket on. He's not wearing a tie. He was moving around, and so you saw him sort of being this kind of happy warrior, giving the speech that's entering him into the national spotlight, and highlighting, you know, some of the things that he's done in Wisconsin with regard to reforms in education in particular, and also with regard to talking about the cutting taxes and moving money and power down to the state and local levels. In a lot of ways, there's a lot of discussion in his sort of attack on Washington of, you know, sort of devolving power to the states and to the localities in particular. He talked about that with regard to some of the education reforms.
And Paul Singer, before the speech, you mentioned a couple possible liabilities in this primary: immigration and gay marriage. If I'm not mistaken, I didn't hear either of those issues amongst a long list of key Republican and conservative issues there.
Yeah, the gay marriage one, I'm not as surprised he didn't talk about. The immigration one sort of surprises me they didn't talk about, because immigration has become a very dominant topic in this electoral cycle, partly because of Donald Trump's dramatic pronouncements of a few weeks ago that Mexico is sending a bunch of rapists and bad people. I expected Walker to offer a more nuanced policy statement of some sort, and I'm surprised you didn't. I mean, honestly, reading the speech that we had beforehand and then hearing the speech again, there was an awful lot of Ronald Reagan here. There's just a lot of Republican themes that have carried throughout, even to the point of Walker talking about the Laffer curve, which I haven't heard about in, you know, 25 years. I mean, again, it's this getting back to trickle-down economics, as Lily was saying, reducing the government, bring it back to the local level, a strong America and a strong family. Very traditional Republican themes, and honestly not a great deal of kind of here's who Scott Walker is, who is unique to carry them forward.
And Lily, a lot of this sounded like it was pitched toward maybe Iowa voters, conservative Republicans. Did you hear anything here that was nodding toward a general election yet?
Well, I think this is also, again, the theme of Walker as the sort of happy warrior is definitely going to be what he's going to run on, not only in the primaries, but if he attains the nomination as the nominee. He's going to be sort of running as this sort of can-do, roll-up-your-shirt-sleeves kind of operator or, you know, president, as he said, and that he had a list of the things he's going to do on day one, repeal the Obamacare, approve the Keystone Pipeline, and repeal the Iranian nuclear deal. And again, he's sort of showing you that there's a number of things that he's anxious and ready to do. He's prepared to do it. He's sort of chomping at the bit to get America going again. That was, again, sort of part of his I think, sort of theme or through line through a lot of this. And I did note, as Paul also pointed out, that it's a lot of reminiscent with regard to Ronald Reagan. There was no mention of George W. Bush. There was a discussion of or mention of the Obama-Clinton, and again, which Clinton we're talking about could be Hillary, could be Bill, the Obama-Clinton foreign policies and Obama-Clinton sort of regulations, and so that it's sort of is a move that is Walker sort of setting up, that he is a possible heir to Reagan, and he might not make the same some of the same mistakes or some of the things that George W. Bush did that were not necessarily in keeping with the Reagan doctrine of devolution and moving power and money or tax funds back to the states.
Paul, thinking of that Bush name, there was a mention Scott Walker and his brother did inherit fame and fortune from our families. Is that a dig at Jeb Bush?
It's a bit of a dig at Jeb Bush, but I think it also speaks to who Scott Walker's going to talk more about who he is. You know, Scott Walker does not have a college degree. He didn't go to Yale. He didn't go to Harvard. That paints across the spectrum of the Republican candidates. He can get up on the stage and say, you know, I'm the one who's the real working class hero here. Ted Cruz, you've got one of those Ivy League degrees too. And he can sort of go down the stage and say, you know, I'm the guy who's the real working man's candidate. I think it's a dig at Bush, but a dig at a lot of them.
Lily, an inside Wisconsin joke there, describing Washington, D.C. as 68 square miles surrounded by reality, a paraphrase of a famous description of Madison, Wisconsin's capital. Are we going to see other Wisconsin themes ported into this national race, do you think?
Well, I think, again, you know, Scott Walker is presenting a candidacy that's also talking about the recall election that he successfully fought off. And so I think that as he's going through the primary states, what he's going to import from Wisconsin is a lot of the sort of talking about how he fended off the unions. He got out special interests when he was advocating for Act 10, that, you know, a number of the budget measures are about, you know, moving responsibility and capacity from Madison to the localities. And so he's sort of expanding that to make it a national theme, moving, sort of special interests off the block in Washington, D.C. and letting the states do what they want to do and localities do what they want to do. And I think that you're going to hear that because that's a lot of what he also campaigned for when he was running for re-election last year.
And we'll leave it there. Thanks to Lily Gorin with Carroll University, Paul Singer with USA Today.
You can hear more coverage of Governor Scott Walker's 2016 presidential bid on The Joy Cardine Show after 7. Political scientist Charles Franklin.
Thanks for listening. This is Central Time.